time for more Positive Living with Patricia Raskin on TalkZone.com.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome back to Positive Living. I'm Patricia Raskin, right here on TalkZone.com. This is the program that shows you how to turn your obstacles into opportunities, your problems, and make your dreams come true. And we have on a great show today for you folks. It's about happiness. I mean, that's what positive living is about. It's about happiness. My guest is the co-author of the book Happiness, Unlocking the Mysteries of Psychological Wealth. And my guest is Robert Biswas-Diener, and he is the co-author of this really great book. He's the program director at the Center for Applied Positive Psychology and part-time lecturer at Portland State University. He's known as the Indiana Jones of positive psychology for his research on subjective well-being in remote cultures all around the world. Welcome back, Robert. Okay, the title of your book is Unlocking the Mysteries of Psychological Wealth. What is psychological wealth?
It's a good question, and I think to lead into to what psychological wealth is, I want to address the question of what happiness is. You know, many people find happiness not only an elusive emotion, but an elusive definition. They think that, you know, there's as many definitions of happiness as there are people out there. And while that may be true, we certainly have a good idea as scientists about what happiness is as a process, as a function, what happiness is for. So most people think of happiness as an emotional finish line, that if you have the right spouse, the right job, live in the right city, you will end up crossing this finish line and sort of dwelling in this fulfilled place. But what our data show is that that just the opposite is true, that you get these natural bursts of positivity and happiness throughout the day. Somebody gives you a compliment, or you find a good parking spot, and it sort of gives you this little burst of positivity, and then you can spend this happiness, just like a type of money, like emotional currency, on the things you value. You spend it on your health, your relationships, your creativity, your job. All that energy helps you maintain your workouts, maintain your friendship with people across the country, those types of things. So when we think of happiness and what it's for, we think of happiness as a natural resource that's meant to be spent, not just as a destination that you're meant to arrive at.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. Then when we talk about psychological wealth, really, we're talking about your complete psychological portfolio. Most people, of course, think of wealth as their personal bottom line, and that's true. But your true net worth includes so much more than just your pocketbook.
Let me just ask you this, Robert. Do you think one of the main determining factors of psychological wealth is your ability to be present in the moment and enjoy the moment?
Yes, I think that is an important aspect, and it's interesting. There's lots of work out there now on mindfulness, on appreciation, on sort of being awake or alive or aware. People use all these different adjectives to describe the sensation, being in flow, really engaging in the moment. But there's also work that shows that you can really savor the future by anticipating good things that are coming up, or positively reminiscing about things that have happened in the past. So there are ways to plumb both the past and the future for their positive effects as well. Of course, you don't only want to be thinking about what's going to happen around the corner or what happened long ago. You do really want to be aware of the moment as well, as you suggest.
Okay. What else do we need to know about psychological wealth?
So psychological wealth is your true net worth. So when you want to know about really how your life is, we would say your psychological wealth includes your happiness, but it's not the only worthwhile outcome. We're also interested in your health, in your positive, intimate, social relationships, interested in your spiritual development, and interested in your material circumstances, your optimism, and your connection to the present moment, your how you relate to the world around you. And all of those things together are your financial and psychological portfolio, your true net worth. That's psychological wealth.
Okay. How do you think people can measure their own happiness? Then if they listen to that, how do they measure?
That's a great question, and usually when I tell people that I'm a scientist who studies happiness, that raises a few eyebrows. For that very reason, they want to know how it's possible to measure such a thing. But the truth is, you probably know right now whether you're happy or not. You know whether this is generally a good day or a bad day, whether things in your life are generally going well over the last few weeks or generally pretty stressful over the last few weeks. And you do that by typically tapping into your just internal emotional experience. And people, especially people in the West, are very good at doing that. So one of the easiest ways to get at your happiness is to fill out a questionnaire, or in my case as a scientist, simply to ask you a variety of questions. How satisfied are you with your life? How frequently during the day do you feel positive emotions versus how frequently during the day do you feel negative emotions? Mm-hmm. And there's a number of questionnaires. In fact, in our book, we have a whole section of questionnaires in the back for people to measure their own happiness and psychological wealth.
Mm. And what responses have you gotten from readers? What do you hear?
From who?
From readers regarding... when they look at the questionnaires, when they take these inventories, what kind of responses do you get back? What do you hear in feedback from people who've done the work and is trying to assess their own happiness?
Yeah, people, most people enjoy doing these because you like learning a little bit about yourself. Just taking the concept of satisfaction, for example, I can ask you a very simple question like, are you satisfied with your life? And that's probably not going to give you a huge amount of new data that you're unaware of. You're not going to say, oh, gosh, I've never thought about that before, because chances mm-hmm. you probably have. But if I say something like, well, if you could live your life over, would you change nothing or almost nothing? And then suddenly mm-hmm. people think about satisfaction in a different way. Oh, not only is satisfaction here in the present, but are there things I regret from the past that I'm dragging mm-hmm. with me into the present? So people typically get some insights, personal insights, by filling out these types of questionnaires.
Yes.
That not only just gauge where they're at in the moment and how happy they are, but also specify the types of places where they experience the most and least happiness.
Mm-hmm. Do you think people can become too happy, meaning almost too optimistic, so that they're a little out of reality?
Yes, and we have identified two different ways in which people can be too happy. And it's funny because basically we think one of our biggest findings is that happiness is widely beneficial. Happiness is proven to help your health, help your relationships, help your creativity, help your income, and help your work life. We have loads of data showing that happiness is a good thing. It doesn't just feel good, but it's beneficial. So people think then that more is better. And if you just become happier and happier and happier, it's just going to continue to pay off for you psychologically. But new studies show that that's not exactly true. My father and co-author, Ed Diener, on the happiness book, once was speaking with the Dalai Lama. And he was talking with the Dalai Lama about whether people can be too happy and whether, you know, if sort of a metaphorical bear were chasing you, should you be happy in that moment, be very optimistic that you're,
mm-hmm.
or should you be feeling negative emotions in that case? And we, of course, think that there are good times and places to feel negative emotions. And the Dalai Lama called this type of happiness stupid happiness. And he got a big kick out of that. So he said there must be two types of happiness, smart happiness and stupid happiness. And stupid happiness is this sort of inappropriate happiness that you're suggesting.
Yeah.
Optimistic where there's no reason to be optimistic. Optimism in the face of evidence to the contrary.
Right. Now that is not to be confused with hopeful. You can be hopeful. You may not be happy or optimistic. But you certainly can be hopeful, and you really need to be in a situation like that so you can get yourself out of it.
Sure, absolutely. And I do think that hope is a great thing. It leads to perseverance. It helps you struggle under difficult circumstances. I think faith can be a very good thing. It helps you think that maybe a turnaround is going to, you know.
How much does spirituality play in all of this in happiness?
Sure. Spirituality is a bit like money in terms of its effect on happiness. That is, it does affect happiness. It is important. It's one of the causes of happiness, one of the contributors of happiness. But it's also not one of the biggest. It doesn't matter as much as your genetic code. But we find across different types of religions that basically people who are religious, and I'm using the actual definition of organized religion here as opposed to spirituality, that they do tend to be a little bit happier. And that could be because they are with like-minded individuals, they exist within a supportive community, they have comforting beliefs about life after death. There could be all sorts of reasons why actual religion helps people. Now, even for spiritual people, that is, people who feel connected to something larger than themselves,
yes,
there can be a benefit for them as well. But here, just as with religion, they probably receive more of a benefit if they're actively doing something to cultivate that spirituality. And that's one of the benefits of religion, is that it provides practices, prayers, liturgies, pageantry, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
That allows people the tools to sort of flex those spiritual muscles that do seem to really pay off where happiness is concerned.
All right. My guest today is Robert Biswas-Diener. He's the co-author with his father, Ed Diener, of Happiness, Unlocking the Mysteries of Psychological Wealth. When we come back, I'm going to ask Robert what it's like to work with his dad on this terrific book, Happiness. And you can log on to his website. And again, your website is...
It's intentionalhappiness.com.
Okay, intentionalhappiness.com. And after the break, you can still call us. There's still time at 888-GO-FOR-IT. If you'd like to ask a question about happiness, certainly we have the expert on. That's 888-463-6748. You're listening to Positive Living. I'm Patricia Raskin. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.